everyone, welcome to the Sketchnote Army podcast. I'm Mike Rohde, your host and the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook. And today, I have none other than Marichelle Baudouin, who's here to talk about sketchnotes, explainer videos, specifically the Rob DeMeo sketchnote video she did for NIST with him, and as well as her tools and the way she approaches sketchnoting. Welcome, Marichelle. How are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm good. Feeling great, actually.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's we're talking late at night, and I'm a night owl, so this actually suits me pretty well. And I'm coming to love this podcast, so it's really fun to hear your voice, and I'm excited about what kind of things you can share with me and with our listeners to explore your perspective on sketchnoting, which I think is so valuable. So maybe to start off with, let's talk a little bit about you, what you do, and what you're about, and then we'll step into your little studio that you run, In a Nutshell Studios, after that. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm a work-at-home mom of three boys, which, as you know, you having three kids also, it's more than a full-time job.
Yep.
So when I can find breaks, I'm illustrating and sketchnoting and drawing letters, drawing comics, doodling. And if I'm not doing that, my other passion is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've been doing that since 1998, and I have the aching joints to prove it. So, yeah, those are probably my three passions in my life going on right now, just my kids and drawing and jiu-jitsu, and that's what I do.
And that sounds like a pretty full plate, too. I know from what my wife does every day, it's definitely more than a full-time job. It's a 36-hour day job at times. So I really admire that you are doing all those things and you're finding a way to balance them and fit them in, and that you make time, especially for the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, to make that a part of your life. And I think I sort of have the sense like maybe the practice perspective that you have in jiu-jitsu may actually help you in your sketchnoting, sort of pushing through things that are maybe not enjoyable for the end goal of making a better result. Would you say that your jiu-jitsu training has actually helped you with your sketchnoting?
I would say my jiu-jitsu practicing has probably helped me with a little bit of everything in life. But if I could parallel jiu-jitsu with sketchnoting, I would say that you push through times that are difficult, and you do things even when you're scared. If it means getting better, and you continually practice, and practice makes almost perfect. And it's just a never-ending, continual thing that you'll always be learning, always be getting better at, you know, coming up with new moves. And, yeah, I guess in that sense it parallels sketchnoting in that way.
Interesting. And I think I sort of look at some kind of a discipline or a practice like jiu-jitsu as providing that discipline. And I think, is there a sense that you learn these moves and you repeat them and you practice them so that it becomes second nature when the moment comes where you have to do this and not think about it?
Exactly. It's right? Something you could do with your eyes closed, right?
Yeah. And yeah. I think that can definitely benefit your sketchnoting practice as well. So this ability to do things that you can rely on when you're in sort of maybe a pressure situation, and that could be in a live event, or it could also be maybe under a deadline to produce an illustration, or in your case, also explainer videos where you're putting these pieces together and you just got to kind of stay with it. And these skills that you've been building actually come in handy to maintain your momentum and keep things going.
Yeah, I guess now that I think about it, it is a challenge of mine to do live sketchnoting. I actually don't do that. I pencil everything at a live event first, and then I ink later, like at home, or later on when the speaker's done talking. But you know, I do find like drawing objects to be somewhat intimidating, And it's not something that I could just do live. You know, I can't, I probably couldn't even draw a dog, honestly. Like, if someone told me to draw a dog, it would look nothing like a dog. But I knew that, I know that if I kept practicing drawing a dog without having to look up what a dog looks like, I'd actually get better at it, and I wouldn't have to, you know, rely on a reference image in order to draw a dog. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that's, in fact, that's what I sort of teach when I do the either the Sketchnote mini workshop or the full workshops. I go into initially breaking drawing down into sort of those simple approaches and then encourage people as they draw simple things and start building things and just give them sort of a, like a framework to start with. Like we can't, there's no way that within, with the time that we have available to really draw everything they could possibly ever encounter, but it does give them the skills to think about how you could maybe draw that thing. And maybe that includes, you know, going to Google search, doing a, a search, finding a reference element, and then finding a way to craft that into an icon or an image that maybe you can leave in the back of your book. So you don't have to remember it necessarily, but you could actually pull up a, your own reference of how to simply do that. And then the more you do it, it becomes, you know, more, kind of second nature. Like we talked about that parallel with jiu-jitsu where, you know, you just, you can pull it out if you use it a lot. I think those particularly can be helpful for the really simple, small icons. One of the portions that I teach in the workshops is how I take notes in meetings a lot of times, more functional meetings, and I'll use to-do lists and stars and light bulbs for ideas that I have either about what I'm talking about or often what I'm something else that I'm thinking about, and how I've sort of built this little collection of icons that are sort of standbys, and I can use them without thinking much about them. So I think that's that's an interesting perspective to connect a practice in general with helping you build your muscle memory for pretty much anything you want to do that for, right?
Yep, anything.
Interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the work you've done with In a Nutshell Studios, particularly Rob DeMio, who we had on the podcast a little while ago. He talked about his perspective of hiring you to do an explainer video for the government agency he works for, NIST. And it's a very technical agency, and it often for them, it's hard for them to put into words what it is that they do. And he told the interesting story of hiring you to come in and sort of help them figure out what they what their message was and then actually turn it into a Sketchnote animated explainer video. Why don't you talk a little bit about your side of that story and sort of how you approach those explainer videos? Because I think there's lots of Sketchnoters out there that maybe have been approached to do it and they just don't know where to start or even how to think about it. And I think it would be really fascinating for me for sure, and I'm sure many others, to understand how you approach that challenge.
Sure. Well, the first step was to get the content and to know what information I had to work off of. You know, some people they give me audio to work off of. They give me 100 pages of text or one page of detailed info, and some people give me absolutely nothing, and they don't know where to start or even what to give me. So I had to understand exactly what it was that Rob wanted and what was the message that he was trying to convey. And also, what animation style was it that he wanted? You know, you were talking about how sketchnoting styles have kind of evolved over time. And I know that my style has also. And so it really helped to know what sketchnote of mine that Rob liked the best so that we can kind of I can kind of mimic that same style. Mm-hmm. And also the length of the video. The online viewers tend to have a short attention span, so we agreed that 90 seconds would probably be best. And I had to understand also who the audience was, because that helped us to better write a script. And in regards to the script, we decided it was best to keep it short. And since we only had 90 seconds, that's roughly less than 300 words. And I know some people, they just kind of like to skimp on the script writing part and get to the fun drawing part. But actually, the script is like, it's the meat of your animation, man. If you have like really cool drawings and a crappy script where you've already lost the person in the first 10 seconds, it's just, you know, the rest of it is, it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we also had to decide on the voice of the message. Like, did he want it to be serious or did he want it to be light and funny? Since his audience was going to kind of be on the younger side, he wanted to keep up like a sense of wonder, in the script.
Interesting.
So once we had that finalized, we got to the fun part, which was the sketch note, and we translated this script in the visual so that the viewer can better retain the story. And in fact, I think the deciding on the colors portion took us, I don't know, I think I colored the sketch note maybe in like 4 or 5 different palettes. Because I know sometimes we look at a palette and it looks great, but then once you actually apply it to your project, it's just not working. So it took us a while actually to narrow down what colors we were going to use. And then what layout did he want? So for this sketch note, we went with a modular, which was starting in the top left corner and then going left to right. And then we even added like a path for the viewer to follow. Rob wanted like a takeaway sketch note that he could print out for his visitors. So there are some technical decisions there to be made, like how big of a piece of paper was this going to be printed on? Was it going to be a booklet? Was it going to be front and back? Little details like that. So then once we drew the sketch note, we had to decide exactly how each part of the sketch note is going to be revealed in the animation. You know, is it going to be drawn? Is it just going to pop up? Does the color get filled in, or does it appear once everything is drawn? How does each scene transition from one to the next? And like, what direction does the camera pan to, and how many seconds does it take to get there? There's a lot of questions here we need to answer. Like, how do we keep certain scenes from being too busy? And we had to find a balance between keeping the amount and the speed of the animation and the viewer comprehension. We needed that kind of balance because I know, like, let's say if you're telling a story, and we'll go back to my example of drawing a dog. You could probably draw a dog pretty simply, right, as opposed to drawing a house, which is very complex. Let's say a luxury home or something, or a mansion. But when you say dog and you say mansion, it's exactly what, 1 second, but the drawing of it is a different length.
Sure.
So we had to somehow, you know, sync that in, and that was actually kind of difficult.
It sounds like lots of constraints. Like, as you are explaining this process, it's really fascinating, mm-hmm. because, like, as an example, you know, it had to be this video, but it also had to be a printable sketch note. So that's kind of two ends of maybe the same spectrum to make it work as a sketch note flow on a video, but then also produce, you know, an actual page. Sort of puts lots of constraints on you.
Yeah, because for the animation, I mean, we had the script and we had the voiceover explaining a lot of things that in the sketch note doesn't, right? You only have a certain amount of words on that sketch note versus the animation. But the point of the sketch note is to really just trigger the viewer's memory of what they watched.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after that, I actually had to redraw all the illustrations because I originally drew it in a raster program. I drew it in Pixelmator, which is what I used to draw my sketch notes, my digital sketch notes in. Now I use Procreate. But I had to redraw everything using a vector program. And I had to draw it exactly in the order that I wanted it to be revealed in the video. So before I started drawing, I had to decide, you know, how's every line going to be drawn?
Wow.
For example, let's say you're drawing a face. Do you draw the round circular face first, or do you draw the eyeballs first? Because, and then do you want the face to be drawn counterclockwise or clockwise? Like, however it is that you're drawing it is going to be how it's going to be revealed in After Effects. And that was kind of challenging in itself, because I know sometimes, like, if I draw a stick figure's leg, I couldn't draw from the foot up. You know, I had to draw it, like, from the waist down. Does that make sense?
Wow. Yeah, that's... Yeah. I mean, the more you explain this, like, the harder it sounds to me. Like, you had lots of details. I'm
telling you, it looks easy when you watch it, but, man, we put a lot of hours into this thing. I mean, it took us months, the whole process.
Well, ultimately, I think it looks fantastic, and I think response that Rob has gotten, and he's told stories of how people are standing in line taking pictures, like, no, we're going to give you a printout. It's cool. Like, you don't have to take a picture. And then that, I think he said when the scientists who work with him saw the video for the first time, they like flipped out and wanted to, I got to have a copy of that. I have to have a link, because it's so succinctly explained what they do. And what they do is so hard to describe.
I know. It's complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, so my sense is that Rob rightly observed that you have this ability to kind of boil things down, as a good sketchnoter should, to the essentials. And I think, so I think of it from this perspective. When I write, you know, I like to use, there's two friends that I use for editing, and they sort of are great for me because they see all the things that I'm blind to. And I imagine that Rob maybe felt the same way, that he's way too close to this thing, and for him to sort of figure this out would be really difficult because he's too attached in some ways. You need someone to come in and say, okay, nobody's going to care about this detail. Like, we can eliminate that, and we can focus more on this broad area of describing it and really narrow it down to this succinct description, because you being an outsider is actually ideal, because you would probably be the kind of person who would go visit NIST and want to take a tour. And
I'm a layman, and I don't really have the science background that he does.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's kind of interesting that you'd probably make a fantastic editor in that sense, for knowing what to keep and what to cut, right? That's the difficult part of being an editor, is that feel, which I think you learn over time by doing it. So.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I tell you, I love deleting things. I love taking my Sharpie and just blacking stuff out. But you know what? My partner, the other half of In a Nutshell Studio, is actually my husband, Dan. And so I filter the stories out, but he actually filters it even further, and he's really good at that.
Interesting. So you guys make a pretty good team then, that sort of tag team these projects and really boil them down to the essence.
Yeah, I mean, he did all of this technical stuff. I did a lot of the drawing, but he's the one who finished everything up in After Effects and took my storyboard and just took my direction and made my lines move.
Interesting. Now, tell me a little bit about, so did you have experience doing this? Like, how did you decide that you were going to start doing explainer videos? Did you have skills in doing this kind of animation work? Or it sounds like your husband probably does with After Effects, or at least he's a hobbyist with it. Tell me a little bit more about your background and why you chose to actually attempt this, because I've honestly kind of avoided this for the most part, because looking at it, I can sort of work out that, man, this is a lot of work to do explainer videos, and you sort of have to have a system, and I'm not sure that I wanted to step in those waters, because I've already got my plates pretty full. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, the first animation that I've ever seen that really got me was, this sounds really silly, but it was it's based on a video game called the Onyxia Wipe animation. And it took this guy's he was basically doing something in a video game, and he was like super mad, for lack of better terms, but someone like did an animation around just his voiceover. And I thought, man, that would be so cool if we could do, like, a sketchnote around somebody talking who doesn't know that they're being sketchnoted. Does that make sense? I just kind of thought that it had, like, a really cool feel to it. And then once I found VideoScribe, I thought that maybe there was a way to record my drawing in pieces and to put it together into something around a script.
Interesting. So you just sort of decided to approach this thing and work it out, like you didn't have any there's no professional skills or anything that you brought to the table. You just figured it out, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I had one sketch note. It was a story on Mark LaRue's life, just some milestones that he had in his life. I did a sketch note. It was really long. And I think just as an experiment, I'm like, hey, Mark, let me see if I can animate my drawing for you. And I found a couple animators who did do that for me. And yeah, I had to redraw everything in Vector and kind of direct how I wanted the lines to appear. And it just turned out really cool. So from there, I just, you know, started taking on other projects. And it's honestly a lot of work.
I can imagine. I can't imagine how much work it is. I can guess, but I'm sure it's probably more work than I can even imagine. But, you know, the end result is this kind of cool video. Now, here's an interesting question. So you've used different tools to create what you've done up till now. And now I think you suggested that you have an iPad Pro, or at least an iPad, and are using Procreate with it. Have you explored any of the animation features of Procreate in this regard? It's a little bit different process, I think, but is that something you've explored?
Yeah, I have, and you know, I've recorded my drawing before, but the problem with it is only it doesn't really draw, it doesn't record your movement, so it'll just show what you've drawn in sequence. Does that make sense?
Yep, yeah.
So it's almost like, okay, so let's say you draw something and then push the undo button a bunch of times and then push the redo button. That's what you would see in your final video. Just like,
so you would see all the, okay, got it. Yeah. So you have a lot less control than sort of the way you've approached this other thing. And I guess the pain of doing vectors ends up being a payoff later, because once you've got those vectors, then you can spin them and rotate them and size them and move them. And like, you have total control over what that looks like, how it draws, all those things now are under your control. Where if it's pixels, you have a different kind of control. Like, you have a limit on, it depends on what kind of video you're doing, right? Like, maybe in many cases, Procreate's okay, but in the kind of stuff you're talking about, it sounds like it wouldn't actually sync up as well as one might imagine.
Yeah.
It seems like in every podcast I mention this app, but have you played at all with the app called Concepts? It's an interesting tool. It's a drawing tool, but it's actually vector-based underneath. So when you draw things, you can actually select those objects, change the color, change the weight, change the brush, size, rotate, move, copy, like all this kind of stuff. But it feels like a drawing application. And then what's kind of interesting is if you buy the Pro version, I think it adds some brush features, but probably the key part of it is you can export like as an SVG file or pixel files to other places. So you can save it out, put it on Dropbox. So that could be kind of an interesting tool, maybe, now knowing that you use this vector to actually draw these in there, maybe. I don't know, maybe it wouldn't work.
Well, the vector program that I'm using is called Graphic. It used to be called iDraw for Mac.
Oh.
And it does exactly what you just described that Concepts does. But yeah, we use this app called VideoScribe because it makes our lines move for us, and it's a lot more difficult to have to do all of that in After Effects. So there's a few apps that I had to use to make this whole thing come alive. Did you want me to go over a little bit about VideoScribe?
Why don't you give some context on VideoScribe? You mentioned that a few times, and I don't know that application. It would be kind of interesting to hear sort of how you work with it and what the requirements are to use it.
Well, I had to, like I said, I had to redraw the illustrations of the sketch note. And then I had to import all of those individual SVG files into VideoScribe. And the NIST video had about 16 scenes and 30 separate illustrations. So even the text and the typography, I had to draw that separately. And VideoScribe doesn't play well with fills. Fills don't animate. They just kind of appear. So the video VideoScribe doesn't handle overlapping colors well either. And what we learned was that the speed at which VideoScribe animates depends on the number of anchor points in your path. so we would have to remove or add anchor points as needed to adjust the speed. So let's say if you're drawing a curved line and you had 10 anchor points in there, for it to animate between like anchor point 1 and 2, was the exact same time, no matter how far apart the points are.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, if I had a curve line with a ton of anchor points, let's say, I don't know, 30 or something, it took forever to draw. So I would have to go in and delete those individual anchor points to adjust the speed.
And I guess the other side would be a problem too, right? Because if you only had like a circle, if you had 3 anchor points, it might actually draw too fast for what you want, right?
Exactly. And then let's say we needed that line to be drawn slowly because maybe the voiceover was slow at that part or something, or she was talking about a lot. And like I was saying, how, you know, drawing a simple, let's say, circle versus a mansion, it takes a lot longer to draw, you know, little details of a mansion than it would to draw like a circle.
Sure, sure.
So, so once I imported everything into VideoScribe, we got the voiceover and the music picked out. So I directed a voiceover artist with the tone and the emotion that we wanted conveyed, along with like where to stress points. And the NIST voiceover, it actually took her only 3 takes. I think I paid her like a little over $100 or something. But I think Rob and a few other Today's Doodle people were thinking that that was my voice. And I was like, no, sorry, that's not me. Like, you have a very nice voice. I'm like, thanks, but that's not what I sound like. I guess I could try to sound cheerful and professional, but sorry, guys.
That's why you hire the professionals.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that.
And she could do, she could do it in, 3 takes, and it probably would have taken me, I don't know, months or something to come up with what she did in just a few seconds.
Yeah, and she's got just a really good, the sound of her voice is really, really happy, but serious, like the balance that she has is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's perfect for it, actually. So once we had the voiceover done, I compiled some music that I thought would go well with the video. And all I did was use a search term, wonder, in Audio Jungle, because I knew that Rob wanted to kind of evoke that sense in the viewer. So I'm like, okay, I'll just type wonder in here. And I sent him music samples to choose from. So Audio Jungle was the app that I got the music from.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think Envato is the company.
That's the parent company. Yeah, yeah. Those guys are pretty active.
Right.
Interesting. So then once you had the VideoScribe stuff sort of together and you had all the pieces, is that at the point where it goes into After Effects to be sort of stitched together?
Yep, that's where we had to import all of the assets, and we had to lay everything out so that they were the right scale and the position. All the PNG sequences made from VideoScribe and the color layers from Adobe Illustrator. Because, like I was saying in VideoScribe, the colors don't really play well, so we had to recolor everything in Illustrator. And we use a sketch note as a blueprint, and so my husband brought my sketch note into After Effects, and then he just kind of laid everything out on top of it. And then he brought in the audio, the voiceover, he adjusted the animation to sync with the voiceover and the storyboard. And to add any other animation that wasn't done in VideoScribe, like words popping out, the camera panning, zooming in and out. Like, I think there was a scene where the car actually drives in and its wheels are spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the background having the colors be revealed. All that we did in After Effects.
I was going to say, is After Effects, I've never used the tool. Is it sort of a timeline-based tool, almost like iMovie or something like that? Or is it more of a space tool?
Yeah. Okay. I want to say yes, because I've looked over at Dan working on it and I just run away. Like, I don't even want to look at it. I don't want to learn it. It looks too complicated for me. So it's just so much easier for me to give him something and have him do it.
Sure.
You know, it's very, very intimidating.
Interesting. Well, I think about that because with the podcast, I use GarageBand and it's time-based, you know, timeline, and actually using Photoshop so much in Illustrator and all those layering type tools, the layers of GarageBand actually make a lot of sense once I sort of got the basics down, and it's pretty effective. So it's interesting. I couldn't tell you how After Effects works, but I know the effects that it produces are pretty cool.
I mean, I think they produce million-dollar movies just using this After Effects, right? The possibilities on it are pretty endless.
Yeah. I know that there's this guy named Adam Lisagor, who's popular in Mac circles, who's done his specialty were After Effects things with video, but then telling really good stories. So I think that's where I heard more of that tool. It sort of pops up here and there, but not in my space of, you know, expertise for sure.
Yeah.
And then, so once Dan is done putting it all together, do you then export it out to a video, or how does the process work from there?
Yeah, I guess one last thing, we just had to make sure everything flowed and it was clean, and we rewatched the video from kind of like the viewer's eyes, and to catch any nuances that might be distracting. Because we always have to have the viewer in mind, you know, and try to keep a balance between keeping their message clear and making the video look really cool. So we made changes based on Rob's feedback. And then, which he didn't have much changes needed, so that was cool. For the NIST video, we added some pauses in between the scenes in order to give the viewer a longer time to digest. Because I know that if you don't have those pauses, I think it might be a little much, you know, for a viewer to try to take in everything.
Yeah. Interesting. So then you produced the video, and then I imagine After Effects maybe can even do the compression that you need to produce it. Did you provide Rob with like a high res version that he could use like on a DVD or something, and then sort of break it down for more web use? I imagine those are optimized differently.
Well, I think the only version we gave him was the original, like, suggested export from After Effects onto, like, YouTube.
Okay. Yeah. And it seems like that's worked great. I mean, it looked really good to me. So I think that's fantastic. Hopefully that's helpful for listeners out there. If you have any questions, you can certainly reach out to Marichelle, and we'll have links in the show notes to her on Twitter and her studio link as well. So check that out. So I want to switch gears a little bit and start talking a little bit more about the tools themselves. So we've talked a little bit about software specific to doing an explainer video, but I'm really curious. You mentioned that you've just picked up an iPad, and I want to hear a little bit more about that. And then as well as what were the tools that you're using before the iPad, and how do they compare to each other?
Okay. Well, I recently got the iPad Pro for my birthday, and I guess we'll back up. I follow an account on Instagram, iPad Lettering, and the stuff that she was creating on her iPad was just like, oh man, I gotta try that. Like, I want to know if I can do that. I just saw that as a challenge that I wanted to try to achieve, but it was a very expensive thing that I wanted to do just to see if I could do it, you know? So when I approached Jen, I'm like, do you have any money in the bank to buy this? Because I kind of want to mess around with some calligraphy. And he surprised me with it for my birthday. And I heard you and Rob talking about it too, the iPad Pro with the Procreate and the Apple Pencil, because I guess some of the calligraphy stuff that some people have tried to do don't work as well without the Apple Pencil. And I've tried other apps using just like a Wacom tablet and the stylus, and I was not getting what I was hoping for with it. Calligraphy wise, anyways. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's someone at work showed me her calligraphy on it. She had the iPad Pro 12.9, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. Like, and apparently the calligraphy brushes in Procreate are quite good from what I understand. And so it's kind of cool that these tools are emerging and providing something.
I just found that it, I don't know how it does it, but it just like, it cleans up my lines like a vector program would, but it's not a vector program. Hmm. So I honestly don't know how to do it, but it smooths out my lines, and it's just, it's not something that I can achieve on paper.
Hmm. Interesting. It's very possible that these tools, so as an example, I do complex sketch notes in paper by 53. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's, you know, it's rendering as pixels, but it's very possible that all these apps in the background are actually, you know, using vectors to plot things because they've got those exact points because of the app, the iPad Pro resolution, as well as the pencil's, you know, interaction with it. And so the reason I think this is when I do really complex drawings in paper and then I want to share them, it's sort of, if it's really complex, I get this little dialogue that comes up that says like compiling drawing or something like that. And it's a little spinner. Oh. Like, why would you have to compile it unless there's, you know, you got vector stuff going on in the background. And, you know, once it does that, then it actually, you know, it saves it out. So I imagine that if you think about it from an app perspective, if they're using sort of this vector-based approach, it's probably more efficient for them to draw those points. And if there's any kind of undo that's more than a couple, to remember those exact points and where they were, having those vector coordinates actually might be the only way to reasonably do that. So it could be that all these apps like Procreate and so on are actually using vectors in the background. They just don't let you select them in the same way as like a Concepts would, where it builds with vectors. And one of the controls they have on the brushes is this smoothing control, where you can adjust the smoothing capacity.
Yeah.
And you know, when you draw it, it can smoothen it quite a bit. I tend to leave things almost unsmooth because I like to have that feel, but I've occasionally switched it the other way just to play with it. So that's pretty interesting observation.
There are some lines that you want to show your hand jittering a bit. You don't want it to be too perfect, right? And then there's some lines that you want a little bit smoother than the other. So
I guess it depends on what you're trying to achieve with it. So before you had the Apple Pencil and the iPad Pro and Procreate, what tools were you using before to do the work that you were doing?
I was drawing in a photo editing program called Pixelmator.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
Definitely.
On my MacBook Air. And just using the simple brushes, because really for sketchnoting, I didn't want to come up with anything too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed a standard default brush, which it had.
And then did you have a tablet? Did you use your mouse to draw lines, or were you actually using a tablet?
Yeah, I was using the Wacom tablet and the stylus that came with it. I think it was the Intuos.
Okay.
And I might have gone through like two or three of those.
Hmm.
Something would happen with the USB cord, and I would have to like bend it super hard and then like get some duct tape and tape it up. it was just a mess, but I guess I was kind of loyal to that brand.
Yeah, and I know they have even higher end, it's called the Cintiq line, which I have an old 12-inch one, which I thought that I would use it a lot more than I actually turned out to use it, because those reasons, but it was so clunky to actually run it with my MacBook Air, because I would have to basically disconnect my monitor and plug it in, and there's this, you know, all these thick, heavy cables all over the place and a switcher box, and you know, it basically was a monitor with a screen on top of it, and you could draw incredibly detailed stuff. I would use it occasionally, but it was like an ordeal to set it up. It's really designed for someone with a desktop machine who always uses it, or it just sits on their desk and you don't mess with it. That's the ideal use for it. And that was not how I was using it.
Mobile.
Mm-hmm. No. And you know, over the years, I've become a very mobile person, you know, MacBook Air and just traveling around. And so honestly, it was more that I just wasn't the right candidate to use that tool, because I do have friends who use them and love them, and I know they're fantastic. And the nice thing is you can use whatever tool you want, Pixelmator, Photoshop, Illustrator, and it just basically controls the device with this stylus, which is very precise. But I do think that the Apple Pencil and the iPad Pro are starting to approach, at least in this neighborhood, I've said before, like, I can't really honestly compare how good the iPad Pro and Pencil are compared to a Cintiq. I'm certainly, even the 12.9 is only as big as their most basic version, because I think they have a 27-inch or maybe even bigger ones. So, I mean, if size is a requirement, like, they wouldn't even reach into that space. But the portability and the lightness and the quality of control in that Pencil is kind of amazing. So it'd be interesting. I'll have to see if I can find someone who's a heavy-duty Cintiq user, and they can maybe give me a better critique of the comparison. But that's really interesting. So it's much more mobile for you. Do you find that having the Pencil and the iPad Pro and Procreate frees you up to do more work than you did in the past? You mentioned that you just sort of use a space in your kitchen to do your work. Do you find now you can actually go other places and do more work than you could before?
Yeah, for sure. I don't need as much real estate as you're saying. It's just kind of plop it on a pillow or on my lap or something and be able to draw anywhere. I don't need to plug it in like I would my my MacBook Air. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think that definitely is a big win for me, the portability and the adaptability to take it where I need to go. I'm much more likely to take it along to meetings now and actually sketch note the meetings, or if I go to lunch somewhere, I might take it along and just for fun, you know, sketch note the lunch or something like that. So it's actually freed me up in a lot of ways. It's provided something that is sort of in between, you know, the Mac and just analog paper. So that's pretty interesting. So tell us a little bit about, so which iPad Pro did you choose or was chosen for you? Maybe that's a better way to
put it. The iPad Pro, remind me the sizes that they come in.
So there's two sizes. There's 9.7, which is the smaller one. That's like a traditional iPad, which is the one I have. And then 12.9, which is the Rob DiMio size.
Okay. I got the smaller one.
Okay.
Which sometimes for me, I feel like I run out of space, and then I remember, oh, okay, I could just make my drawing smaller and move it over.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep, and that's kind of what I do. I think because I've always experienced iPads, either as a iPad, the 9.7, or the mini, I've always been used to moving things around. And I think that's actually one of the reasons, like Rob and Mauro and other people, actually like the 12.9 or Catherine Madden, they quite like this larger size because they don't necessarily have to move the screen around as much. But it definitely becomes bigger and bulkier and a little bit harder to carry, although still very, very portable and lightweight and mobile. So, are there any other tools that you like? So, you know, you like Procreate. Have there been any other tools that you've discovered that help you, or any hacks that you've done to the Pencil to make it more useful for you?
For now, I'm, you know, just learning Procreate still. In fact, yesterday, I think it took me like over an hour to figure out how to cut and paste something. It was just, I'm not too savvy, I guess, when it comes to all this digital stuff. So I'm still learning. But yeah, for now, Procreate. I'm slowly trying to transition from Pixelmator to Procreate, because there's some things that I could do in Pixelmator that I can't do here, and I'm just trying to force myself to do like all my sketch notes in Procreate and not have to go back to Pixelmator. Because
is there do you know if there's a Pixelmator app for the iPad that could make use of the Apple Pencil that would maybe
there probably provide is that? There probably is. I guess I'm a creature of habit in a way, and I don't want to know if if that's possible, because then I'm going to be messing around on Pixelmator on this, and I want to really not be an expert at Procreate, but I want to learn it more before going back to Pixelmator. So
focus on one tool at a time, which I realized pretty quickly when I had 5 or 6 apps, like it was that wouldn't work, and then focused on a few that actually worked much better. And so Now, and I imagine once you get really confident with Procreate that you would maybe explore other apps or go yes. deeper into the app. And, you know, the funny thing is you made the comment about copying or cutting and pasting, and I was totally confused too. And I actually reached out to Rob, and he said, oh, yeah, here's how you do it. There's like a swipe or something like that that actually achieves it. Yeah, it's
like a three-finger swipe down. Who would have thought? Like, how am I supposed to know to do that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's an effort to, you know, simplify the user interface in the app and not have icons everywhere, which they certainly could have done. Maybe that's maybe that's one they actually should have had an icon for. I don't know. But it's actually a pretty cool app, and I haven't really touched that one yet. But I definitely am going to go that direction eventually. So it's pretty interesting. Now, let's shift gears one more time and talk a little bit about analog stuff that you do. Do you do analog sketch notes? And if you do, what are sort of your favorite things to work with?
I do, I guess if I have to, I prefer not to anymore. I don't know why. I guess it's just easier for me digitally. But if I have to, I will just use a Dixon number 2 pencil and my Sharpie pens.
Interesting. So you use the smaller Sharpie pens or the thicker, the ones that everybody's sort of more aware of?
I use the ultra fine point Sharpie for smaller lines, and then just a standard permanent, you know, the Sharpie permanent marker fine point for the thicker stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Tombow markers to color.
Interesting. Well, the way I've been wrapping up these podcasts is I tie it up with having guests talk about three tips that you can share with other sketchnoters who are listening that they maybe can apply today and make their sketchnotes a little bit better. So if you're thinking about that, maybe what are a couple of tips? If you can come up with three, that'd be awesome, that you can recommend. And it doesn't have to be drawing tips. It can be mindset tips or how you approach things or encouragement, any kind of suggestions like that would help somebody listening.
Okay. Well, for those new to sketchnoting, I would say my first tip is to just do it. Just start, and to not worry about needing the perfect paper, the perfect pen, the perfect digital tool. Just use whatever it is that you already have. And then second, I'd say, is to have zero expectations of what you think it needs to look like. Like, it doesn't need to look like anyone else's. So again, just start somewhere and don't worry about it looking good, and just see it where it goes. Because what makes a sketch note, it's just sketches of notes. So as long as it is that, then you've achieved the goal of doing a sketch note, right? Just make it look, just sketch away and doodle away. Let it be rough, let it be sketchy. Add some doodles, add some borders, add some squiggly lines, some straight lines, dotted lines. For me, I sketchnote to retain. So as long as I'm retaining what I'm listening or what I'm watching, then my sketchnoting is working. Yeah.
Well, those are great.
Yeah. I do have a third tip, which would be to buy your book if you haven't already, the Sketchnote Handbook, because there's lots of great tips in there. And also because I'm in there.
Yes. And I think the other thing that we sort of maybe skirted by was you're also, I think, a gamer, right? So the some of the submissions you had was it a lemon meringue pie or a key lime pie? Coconut cream pie, but it was from a gamer's perspective, right? So I thought that was kind of cool. And so you'll see that in the book. So, well, thank you so much. I'm really honored that you would come on the show, and I really love the video you did with Rob. I think it's just a really great way to capture what they did. I know they were so excited. Rob's talked so highly of the work you did. So thank you for putting in all those many hours and helping Rob out. I know he's super appreciative. And I think it's really good that you can take, you know, what could very easily be a very opaque government agency and actually make it understandable. I think that's a huge deal and much more valuable than maybe is often given credit for. So thank you for doing that and sort of showing us a way to do that and also sharing sort of some of your inside tips on how you approach it. So thank you. I appreciate you being part of the Sketchnote community and coming on to to share your wisdom with us.
Well, I am also thankful for you, because actually the first sketch note that I had ever seen was yours, and you've coined the term. So it's an honor for me to be here. I had a lot of fun animating that sketch note with Rob. I actually loved it. I know I say that it was like a lot of work, and but it was all worth it for us, you know. And yeah, and I'm around if anyone needs help with like anything. Just let me know. I actually love talking about sketchnoting.
Interesting. So I think the last thing we'll do is share the places that it's easiest to reach out to you, like your little company website, and maybe where you're active, what social media you're active with, so people can reach out and say hello.
Sure. I'd say Twitter is probably the best place to get a hold of me. I'm at It's Lil Peanut, LilPeanut. Hmm. And then from there, you guys can jump on my website. It's inanutshellstudio.com.
Cool. Well, thanks again for making time, Marichelle. And I'm excited to share this with the community. I know they're going to really love it. And I hope you have a great week. Thanks for making time.
Thanks, Mike. All right.
Thank you. We'll see you on the next Sketch Note Army podcast.